The World Acadian Congress is underway, spanning two nations and two time zones. Every 5 years, people of Acadian descent come together for a two-week celebration that includes family reunions, parties, seminars, cultural events, and more. It's called the World Acadian Congress, and this time, it's being held in the St. John Valley, both in Maine and Canada. Events are being held in northern Aroostook County, as well as right across the border in New Brunswick and Quebec. 50,000 people are expected to attend from 120 Acadian families. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn more about the World Acadian Congress, its impact on the region, and why it's so important for people of Acadian descent to come together and share their history. Maine Calling learns about Acadian culture. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Underway right now in northern Maine and parts of Canada is the 2014 World Acadian Congress. The event's held every 5 years. Acadians gather with family and friends to celebrate their heritage. Today we'll hear from four guests with very strong ties to the two-week-long Congress. Joining us from a CBC studio that has been set up as part of the Congress in Edmundston, New Brunswick, George Dumond. He is president of the Maine Regional Committee of the Acadian Congress. Lise Pelletier is director of the Acadian Archives at the University of Maine in Fort Kent. Don Levesque, vice president of the 2014 Acadian Congress. And also with us, Judy Parody, who's a former state legislator from the St. John Valley. Of course, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about the Congress or about Acadian history? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Bonjour to all of you.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
So exciting to have you here and the wonders of technology to have you with us from Edmundston. Very exciting. And George Dumond, let me start with you. Tell us about the World Acadian Congress. I have heard it described as the monster family reunion. Not as in that you are monsters, but that it's so large.
Yeah, it is. It is. Obviously, you know, the center of the World Acadian Congress has always been around family reunions. That's how they originally started. Was a group of Acadians met, felt that they needed to meet as Acadians, and that was, of course, four Acadian Congresses ago, each one of them being 5 years apart, of course. And then it's built since that time. Of course, it's much larger now. We have 120 family reunions that are going on during this time, and most of them in Maine, by the way. We didn't have the funding that Canada had. We decided instead.
Most of them in Canada.
Maine did not have the funding, so.
This is my role as the vice president of the committee.
Yeah, keep me straight, right? Yeah. So, you know, we decided to put more emphasis on family reunions, and we have the majority of the family reunions in Maine.
I have read that you hoped to have 80 family reunions, but blew that goal away.
Yes. But hey, listen, they've worked hard. There are, you know, these three regional committees have worked hard, really, to engage all these Acadian families. And you know, we gave them all some funding initially. If they reached certain goals, we gave them more funding. And, of course, that's a good incentive.
Lise Pelletier, you began working to have this World Acadian Congress come to northern Maine and this part of Canada for 6 years. How did you all do it? How did you get it to come to you?
Well, it actually it didn't come to the entire region at once. A couple of people from Edmundston actually thought that the idea could fly, and they came to see me, and being of Acadian literature background and Acadian history, I immediately knew that this was an unbelievable idea and that it could benefit our area greatly. And the idea is really to go back to the historic and geographic Madawaska territory, which encompasses northwestern New Brunswick, the Upper St. John Valley in Maine, and Temiscouata County in Quebec. And so very shortly, representatives from each of those regions got together. We put an application together, a video together. We sent that off in November of 2008 and started meeting with judges in 2009.
And can you believe that it's here?
I can.
You can believe that the day has come.
Yes, I mean, I think in order for such an event of a magnitude to be successful, I think you have to believe that it's here all the time, and you go with that. And of course, the St. John Valley people are no strangers to hard work. So it's been an incredible volunteer and collaborative effort throughout the 6 years.
Don Levesque, how's it going so far?
So far, so good. It really is exciting. It's real, and I think we've always believed that it was real. But I think that in the last month or so, the local people have started to believe that this is actually going to happen, and that actually 50,000 people are probably going to show up here within in the 17 days. So it's going really, really well. We had to split ourselves in many, many, because there's so much going on, so much that you would want to attend to, that you have to pick and choose and miss something that's probably good, but find something better, and it's really, really, really exciting.
Don, where is everybody staying?
Most of them sleep at night. Some, I'm sure, are staying up all night. No, there are.
How is this region housing 50,000 extra people?
If I don't know if you realize that if you put a pin on the bridge in Madawaska and you take a radius of about 50 miles, there are 100,000 people living here. You know, we're four times as big as South Portland. You know, we're three times as big as Lewiston, twice as big as Bangor. So this is a huge area, because what people in the other Maine think of us, they think of the St. John Valley. You know, but for us, this is one homogeneous region. You know, with 100,000 people.
And housing, really, when you look at housing, the past Acadian congresses have been in one location. You know, let's say one city, one location. So they've always been challenged with feeding that many people and housing that many people. But now we're talking about three regions, and as Don explained, it's a very large region, a lot of housing there. This Congress will not look like other Congresses in the past. We've known that all along. So people thinking of 50,000 people coming to the region, it's not 50,000 coming to one small town or city or whatever.
Yeah, coming to Madawaska, for example.
For example, yes. Yeah. So I think we're going to see it there.
I had heard that hotel rooms in Bangor were sold out, that people are driving, too.
Oh, there are some, yeah. I mean, quickly, even areas outside of the area that, mm-hmm. that is hosting the Congress, for example, Caribou, Presque Isle, they sold out very, very early. I mean, years ago, those rooms sold out. A lot of those people obviously were technicians and radio people, but, these are all support people that come with the Congress, and they all take up rooms, and it's all good for the economy, so.
Judy Parody, I want to bring you into the conversation. Tell me what having the World Acadian Congress right literally in your backyard means to you.
We often hear that people say they're overnight success, but it started 50 years ago, and it did start 50 years ago when some of us, when the population here, a lot of the youngsters who were raised in this banning the French from Maine were raised, when we became adults, we decided to do something about it. But luckily, the parents had continued giving us this beautiful language, and now we realize that it fits with every other speaker from anywhere. There are 230 million French speakers in the world on over five continents. Now we're finally getting the permission to people to be who they are. I think we'll never put that genie back in the bottle. I want all our Francophone, people all over the state of Maine, where you might be late, but you're not. There's still a lot of programming going on. But we have an Acadian festival that's going to be 38 years old next year. So we're going to continue this effort, and we know how to do this very well. So it's a very, very exciting time. All our people are so ready. We've been working on building up all the societies, the historical societies. The Canadians love it, the French Canadians, because they're coming to Maine and they're being treated by young people en français. So we're very excited.
I had a reporter from Témiscouata, Quebec, come up to me and say that he was able to get served in French at McDonald's in Madawaska, where he's not able to do that in Ottawa, Canada. You know.
Well, Lise, I think it's time for a history lesson. Who is an Acadian? Tell us, give us the basic history, because very few of us learned it in school.
Good question.
Okay.
We don't even learn it up here.
That's right.
Exactly. I understand that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it is not part of the state mandated curriculum to teach about Franco-Americans and Acadians of the state of Maine. And yet, the population of Franco-Americans, I think, is close to 40%, or the descendants of French Canadians, if you will, though they might not always recognize that they are of French descent. Anyway, the Acadians arrived in the Madawaska Territory in 1785. So this is before Maine was a state. So actually, everybody else was an immigrant. But
everybody but us.
So 1785, and then and for a very long time, from 1785 to, let's say, 1825, very homogeneous group settled on both sides of the St. John River. Acadians, and that meant Acadians married to Acadians, Acadians married to Quebec people. Some escaped the deportation, the huge ethnic cleansing.
Can I stop you there? What is the deportation? Tell me what happened.
Oh, the deportation, and here I will quote the book by John MacFarriger, who calls it a great and noble scheme. It is the forced removal of the French Catholics of Nova Scotia, who were known as Acadians, from 1755 to 1762. About 25% of the population escaped. They went on foot into the woods. They went through the lower St. Lawrence Valley. They went to the Gaspé area, to the Île de la Madeleine, or the Magdalen Islands. Unfortunately, 75% were deported. Half that population died. When they were deported, they didn't go back to France, which is what they thought would happen. Instead, they were deported to colonies, British colonies, that were hostile to French Catholics. And there they were put in prisons. When they boarded the ships from Nova Scotia, they were sent, the families were separated, they were sent on different ships with different destinations, and while they boarded, the British soldiers and American farmers burned down the villages and destroyed the crops, and the message there was quite strong. The message was, you have no more homeland, you will never come back here, these lands now belong to New England planters. And that's exactly what happened. Within a very few short years, the rich agricultural lands of the Acadians were given to New England farmers, and Acadians were scattered everywhere along the Atlantic coast. Some were sent to prisons in England. And the remarkable thing is, everywhere they went, they petitioned government for better treatment. They were treated, they were bound out as slave labor, actually, and kept in prisons. But they requested or demanded to be served as, to be seen as prisoners of war, which did not happen because the colonies didn't have enough money. Eventually, after the deportations, the Acadians came back to the area, saw that their lands had been taken over. They had no more records because they'd all been burned. And they were relocated to very specific isolated areas in Nova Scotia to start with. And they couldn't settle more than 10 families at a time. They could not vote. Some could not get deeds to the lands because they were Catholic. And so there started, for some of them, the journey into New Brunswick and what we call the migrations that lasted until the 1800s. Many of them moved to Louisiana, which is where our Cajun cousins come from.
The word Cajun is derived directly from Acadian, right? A different pronunciation of it.
It is.
And so, do you have, where are people visiting the Congress from? Where are your visitors, those 50,000 people coming from? I'm assuming many from New Orleans and from Louisiana, but where else?
They're from all over. You cannot believe how many people from Europe are fascinated by this region of Maine. They are totally in love with the fact that Americans in Maine speak French. And we have been courted for 5 years now. And when they find out about us, it's like a love fest. They can't get enough. They want us to speak and just listen to us speak French. And what are you doing about it? And are there many people still speaking French? And it really is amazing.
Doesn't it sound like we should be, the Maine should be advertising in French in France and saying, you know, there's almost 100,000, you know, Mainers who parlent encore français, puis qui sont fiers d'être français, puis qui veulent vous rencontrer, who still speak French, who are proud of speaking French and would like to meet you.
I remember when I got elected in 1986, for a whole month before I left the area to go to Augusta, I practiced speaking English. And when I went there, I found people were not admitting out loud, they whispered to me because they knew where I was from. And so my maiden voyage on the floor of the house, it was, bonjour, mon nom c'est Judy Ayotte Paradis. Je suis, la langue que vous entendez, c'est la belle langue française. Nous, dans ma culture où on vient, on parle français. Alors, that changed the mood because then they were coming up to me, the members, and telling me, oh, mon nom c'est Richard, mon nom c'est La Chance, mon nom. And then we had the first Franco-American Day, and we had 400 people showing up because the French did not go to the legislature. They did not go into the building. And we had music in every corner, and we have Franco-American Day, and slowly and surely, we want to thank these people who are managed the language, managed the culture, taught their children anyway, despite being told that was not, there was a law. April Fool's Day, 1919, our Ku Klux Klan governor and many members of the passed this law, and only in 69 did Senator Violet and Representative Levesque finally convince them that they could no longer do this to children. And that put us back so far, but we're never going to be back there. We're back in control now. We're not going to say, don't ever tell me I don't speak the appropriate French.
You know what? I hate to say this, but we have to take a break. We'd like you to join the conversation if you're listening. 1-800-399-3566. We will be right back in just a couple minutes.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Revision Energy, now offering Own Your Power loans for solar energy systems. More at revisionenergy.com. Now you're cooking. Purveyors of kitchen tools, gadgets, cookware, and fine wine for over 10 years on historic Front Street in downtown Bath. Open 7 days a week. And Casella, converting landfill gas to electricity, committed to providing clean, renewable energy for Mainers. Casella, giving resources new life. Today is Wednesday, and tomorrow is not just a Thursday, but it's Super Thursday, our one-day summer membership campaign. All of us working together to ensure that MPBN has the financial support needed to keep your valued programming intact and that we do it as quickly and painlessly as possible. Please help make this short but sweet membership campaign a success. You can renew your pledge, become a new member, join the Evergreen Friends of MPBN, increase your pledge. Every call will help. Summer visitors are most welcome. Together, we can do it. Tomorrow, Super Thursday. Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the 2014 World Acadian Congress. Joining us from a special CBC studio at the Congress in Edmundston, New Brunswick, Lise Pelletier, who's director of the Acadian Archives of the University of Maine at Fort Kent. Judy Parody, a former state legislator from the St. John Valley. Don Levesque, vice president of the 2014 Acadian Congress. And George Dumont, president of the Maine Committee of the Acadian Congress. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net. You can send a tweet to @MaineCalling or post to our Facebook page. Right before the break, Judy Parody, you were describing what it was like to grow up Even though you were growing up in Maine, because of the law that was passed in 1919, you were not allowed to speak French at school. You were not allowed to be taught French at school. In 1969, you said that law was repealed, but still in 1986, when you were elected to the legislature, some people were ashamed of speaking French. And I think people who are new to Maine or people who are young people may not even be able to relate to a time that was really such a short time ago. Would you say that things have changed dramatically in your lifetime, or is there still, do you believe, a bit of a prejudice against French speaking?
There is still a prejudice against French people, but slowly and surely it's up to us. You who have been given this beautiful language, who have this culture, it takes 20 years to lose a language, 100 years to lose a culture. There is no doubt when we applied for this CMR, the big argument was, come and support us. We've been loyal to you. We've done everything right, and we need you to come. And they had never gone to a Terre et Forêt. They had never. They'd only done the Congrès on the ocean, because we were seafaring people, supposedly, not by choice, obviously. But so we're finding out that this entire territoire, we're going to be a force to reckon with, because with the Quebec, New Brunswick, and Maine, the problems we've been having at the border since 2011, because of the Congrès Mondial Acadien organization, that is moving along. They even imported people to help out with the masses, and they asked for French speakers or French roots. And the other night, it was 9 o'clock, and the bridge had been well cleared by the time I got to Madawaska, and the gentleman had an accent, and so after he did the protocol, I said, thanked him profusely for coming, and I said, merci beaucoup, bonsoir, and he said, au revoir. And so just the thought that the state police, the officials that brought people up here to help out, are sensitive to the fact that a lot of our Canadians are monolingual francophones, and it's very intimidating, and we hear all the time they're not coming to visit us. We're not going to get the progress, the customers from Boston, but we certainly get a lot of customers.
I'd like to jump in.
Yeah, go ahead, Lise.
I'm kind of in a different situation, and I've been in the public schools in the last few years, and unfortunately, French is showing a steep decline at a much greater rate than we had previously anticipated. And if it's not validated by the public schools, then children get the message that, hey, it's not worth speaking. And parents, you know, they get tired of fighting with kids about preserving their language. But it's not just a language of heritage. I mean, here in the St. John Valley and elsewhere in the world, our close proximity to French-speaking New Brunswick and French-speaking Quebec, but also all of Europe. I mean, the CMA, if anything, has taught us that, oh my gosh, I mean, geography is so close. There are no boundaries if we have the will and we have the vision. And one of the visions is creating a greater territory, and that involves French-speaking people. And we recognize immediately that our commissars or our businesses in Maine can greatly be enhanced by that fact. Look at Border Patrol or Border Customs. The Center of Training mandates that every recruit go through an intense Spanish language immersion. But they never think of doing or having them do a French immersion. And yet the border between Canada and the United States is French and English. So why is that reality not acknowledged?
I'm going to go to our first caller. I'm going to go to Sheila. Sheila Jans from Madawaska. Sheila, did I pronounce your last name properly?
Yes, that's right.
And I know that you are, you know everybody here taking part in the show very well, and that you also really view this, this is a wonderful economic opportunity for the St. John Valley. Tell me what you believe the legacy of the World Acadian Congress will be for your region.
Are you asking this to George here?
This is to Sheila Jans, our caller.
Hi, George. And actually, all of you have been involved. All on your panel today, talking with you, have been really involved in something that I consider just an incredible opportunity for this region, and actually for all of Maine.
We're not able to hear Sheila, but that's.
Can you hear me? Or
Here we go.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes,
we
now we can.
Okay, I'm not on a cell phone. Okay. What I was saying, actually, and all the panelists today will agree with me that this is beyond just an event, and I know that they know that because for 5 years they've been very much involved in the planning of this, and they can see where the possibilities can grow. And I look at this as beyond just an event for the St. John Valley and for the international, the territoire, the three regions. It is for the state of Maine very strongly an incredible opportunity. So it's being able to pay attention and raise the awareness of the value of our culture and of culture in general, and how can we build upon that and leverage economic prosperity for this particular region, but also for Maine. A strong northern Maine is a strong Maine, period. And so there has been, actually, as part of the Congress, and I think I really applaud a lot of the people who were part of this, is they did some really introspective analysis on how do we build that legacy for beyond the momentum and this incredible energy of this Congress. How do we continue the dialogue between this international region?
Yeah. Yes.
And through through a lot of planning, there was an economic plan that was developed, that or the first stages of it, that will begin the dialogue on an international level. So There's been a lot of really good thinking about what do we do beyond just this particular event. How do we build prosperity with the culture, with the language, with where we are geographically with one another?
Sheila, thanks so much for calling in. George, did you want to respond to
what
she said?
Oh, yes. I mean, Sheila's right on. We've said all along from the beginning of the Congress that we didn't just want a successful event, which, of course, we will have. But we wanted to leave a legacy. There has to be a legacy to this Congress, really. And a core economic group was formed, and it's comprised with a multifaceted of people, not just in manufacturing or tourism, but many, many different people have been asked to serve on this core group. And the core group is actually going to continue after the Congress. The Congress will be done in less than 12 days, probably, and here we'll all be patting ourselves on the back, and it's going to be great, and it'll be a great economic boost for the region and the state of Maine, but it has to continue, and that's exactly the legacy of the Congress, and we really hope that we now could tear down some of these boundaries that we've put together for so many years. You know, I think of one right away. I mean, we used to be able to snowmobile across to New Brunswick and Quebec, and if they were registered, they could come here and vice versa. And all those boundaries in the last, I don't know, dozen or so years now you have to pay fees. And these are all things we really need to be examining very carefully between the three regions, and we need to be working more together to help ourselves economically going forward.
Sheila, thanks for taking the time to call in. Going now to Larry in Bangor. Hi, Larry. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I just wanted to express a couple things that annoy me. One of them is that we've lost all of our culture. We've become Americans. We've lost our languages. When my dad was a boy, he spoke German. And when he died, he couldn't speak a word of it. And when my father-in-law was a boy, he spoke Polish, and when he died, he couldn't speak a word of it. And I lament that my ears are getting so bad I can't hear well enough to learn French. But I applaud your Congress, and I hope it really helps foster people learning various languages. And I guess the last thing I was going to say is when I was a boy, I was in Chicago, and they made jokes about Polish people. Polak this and Polak that.
Yeah.
And when I moved to Maine, everything was a French joke.
Yep.
And I don't understand it, but I really hate prejudice, and I hope your Congress is an overwhelming success.
Thank you so much, Larry. I'd like to say a few words to that. And that is, you know, being Acadian, being French, being Franco-American takes absolutely nothing away from our American identity.
Hear, hear.
And whether we speak French and English, there's nothing to be ashamed of there. I mean, identity is not subtractive. Identity is additive. And if we have learned anything throughout the many years we've worked together to put this CMA together, it is how much, how many boundaries, how many psychological boundaries we have set in our minds. And clearly we need to erase a lot of those. But, I mean, saying that is easy, but there's a lot of groundwork too. And it starts in our own backyard.
You know, I had someone tell me, well, you guys up there don't speak Parisian French, do you? And I said, no, we don't. You guys down here speak London English? And she looked at me like my question was really stupid, and mine wasn't any stupider than hers was.
Mm-hmm. we're so proud of our children that are this next generation. Elise alluded to the fact that with all this penalty of not allowing them, which is was as barbaric. One of the things our parents were told is speak only in English to your children. My dad probably spoke a third grade level English, so I would have been deprived of this beautiful native language that has done everything for me. I mean, that I've been to Haiti, I've been everywhere, because they don't need to send a translator with me. I can go because I have that standard French and because there's an old French version of our valley. There's never on the, I was part of the president of the French speaking parliamentarians from Maine. And we went to these meetings everywhere with Africans, and there was never a problem for me to understand them because I'd gotten every version of French there is. So, Larry, you're absolutely right. When we lose a culture, that's a lot. This is the best of who we are, and we're left with what sometimes. And it's not fair, it's not right, it's wrong. And if Maine can start speaking with one voice now and saying, we will allow, we will respect the fact that we have this beautiful bilingual people. Jennifer, you asked a while ago about what's going to happen after the CMA. This has validated us beyond the beyond, and this genie of not being accepted, not being appreciated, will never get placed back in the bottle.
Well, thank you, Larry, for your call. We're going to take another short break. We'd love you to join the conversation. The phone number 1-800-399-3566. More of your comments and questions when we get back. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Hospice of Southern Maine. Calling hospice doesn't mean you're giving up. It means you're taking charge. Learn more at hospiceofsouthernmaine.org. Roosevelt Campobello International Park, the summer home of Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, now open for its 50th season, fdr.net. And Dean Wealth Advisors, independent investment advice to individuals, families, and institutions, DEIGHAN.com.
Hi, it's Steve Inskeep with Morning Edition from NPR News. You know, millions of Americans enjoy public radio and count on it, but many don't know how we do it or how we pay for it. Let's just remember that public radio exists for you and exists thanks to you. No matter what you hear, the largest single source of support for public broadcasting is the people who use it, people who volunteer to contribute to their local public radio stations. Your financial support makes possible everything you hear. So please show your support for MPBN this Thursday with a generous pledge during the Super Thursday one-day pledge drive.
Show your support tomorrow, Super Thursday, August 14th.
What does it take for an ordinary person to become violent?
That line between good and evil, which privileged people like to think is fixed and impermeable, with them on the good side and the others on the bad side, I knew that line was movable and it was permeable.
I'm Guy Raz. Join us next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Join us for the TED Radio Hour following Maine Calling at 1 o'clock here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what's happening at the 2014 World Acadian Congress. Joining us from a special CBC studio, set up at the Congress in Edmundston, Canada, Judy Paradis, former state legislator from the St. John Valley, Lise Pelletier, who is director of the Acadian Archives at the University of Maine, Fort Kent, George Dumond, president of the Maine Regional Committee of the Acadian Congress, and Don Levesque, who is vice president. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. If somebody is listening to this program, didn't know about the Congress, is thinking, boy, I'd like to head up there, is it too late? Is it sold out?
No. Actually, we've always put the Congress out as being all-inclusive. You don't have to be a Franco-American or have any French language knowledge or anything like that. It's an all-inclusive event, and we invite everybody throughout the state to come up here. There is just so much to participate in. And, of course, if you want to participate in one of our 120 family reunions, you know, there's plenty of those going on right now. There's 22 of those family reunions going on Saturday alone here in Maine.
So oh, my goodness. So have any of the four of you been to a personal family reunion yet?
Well, actually, I left my family reunion this morning.
I was at the Deucet this morning.
Oh, really? Okay,
and
great.
And I've got to return back to that after we do this thing here.
And the Paradis are as we speak, and tomorrow it's the Ayotte. So.
Yeah.
Which
so.
Is your maiden name, Judy?
Yes.
Yeah. So tell me what it's like. How many people are at a family reunion? Are you seeing people you know, people you don't know, both?
Actually, you know, there are people from all over the world, certainly all over the United States. I mean, when I look at the Dumont family reunion, for example, there were some... They were really scattered, you know, Michigan, Alabama, Virginia. I mean, it was some coming from everywhere. Yeah, you know, our family reunion, for example, is a little over 200 people that will attend. We have some, the Michaud family, for example, I think is well over 500.
Exactly.
The Habaz are over 500. The Daigles are over 500. So many of these family reunions are quite large. The LeBlancs were stated to be somewhere over 1,000 people
Wow.
that were going to be here in Edmundston, so...
Great. Well, we're going to go to Jay, who is calling from Blue Hill. Hi, Jay. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to just say from a non-Francophone, but somebody who has gotten deeply interested in Cajun music of Louisiana, it's such a joy to go to these festivals in Louisiana and see people from Quebec and New Brunswick and Nova Scotia that show up, these distant cousins, and they get out their fiddles and their accordions, and they start... mixing up the music that's been separated for 200 and some years.
You better hit up here on the 15th if you want to listen to some of this stuff. Yeah.
You got 2 days, man. Come on up.
But mainly I'm curious what lessons can be learned from the resurgence of the French language in schools in Louisiana. How do you take that experience and translate it to Maine?
Well, I think there's a lot to be learned. When Louisiana first started, first of all, Louisiana is a bilingual state, and the people there received a lot of funds to start immersion in French, and it worked for a while. They had to get teachers from Canada, from France, from other French-speaking nations. And what they realized after a while is, although the kids learned normative French or standard French or international French, they couldn't communicate with the local people or their family. And now what they're doing is teaching heritage language along with international French, so that much as we who live in the St. John Valley speak oral French, so that the kids can really communicate with more than their peers. And it's actually quite a social construct. And then, of course, when they learn to read and write in normative French, then they can progress on their own. But it's vital that the oral language be preserved.
It's interesting. So, we have a similar email from Jessie, who's writing from Central Maine. She writes, can we officially change the school language in Maine to Acadian French versus Continental French? She said she was so disappointed in fourth grade.
I vote for Jessie.
So.
Absolutely. It's imputed to you're absolutely right, Jessie. Now we know that the assimilation effort certainly didn't catch very much up here. But so as a result of that, we have a lot of our teachers, our regular teachers that teach math, English, they're also very, very fluent in French, very well educated in French. So the argument of having to import teachers like Louisiana had to do, we never had to go there because we had maintained the language. And so we have a lot of teachers now that are supposedly, like in Madawaska, they're teaching, every child is getting French every day. What they found out was that when these, we had an immersion program for quite a while, and when these kids got to be seniors in high school, they were the top students, because one of the only ways you can raise the IQ of a child is to learn another language. Now, the Kennedys knew that, the Anglos know that they need to have their children learn another language, but we were being denied that. We do have this incredible mélange. Like I said earlier, we can understand the North American, the standard, the Acadian. It's a beautiful mixture, and I want Mr. Levac, who is a singer-songwriter, to tell us about what he did last night.
Last night?
I can't remember that part.
The night before, though, we had a good time in Van Buren. We played music all in French in Van Buren. I had a really good time. We're playing tomorrow. What's today? I'm so confused. From the dates, they all blending together right
today's
now. There's so much going
Wednesday,
on. Wednesday. Okay,
Wednesday.
Now tomorrow then. We're playing for 2 hours for the opening Acadian Festival, and then we're playing at the archives that night. We're playing all over the place. En français. Il y a beaucoup de monde. We're having a very, very good time.
Great. We have so many calls coming in. I'll get to as many of them as possible. Going to Elise in Castine. Hi, Elise. You're on Main Calling.
Oh, hello, Jennifer. Yes, I call from Castine on the beautiful Penobscot Bay area. And I want French Americans to make aware that next year on Bastille Day, the 14 juillet, a French frigate comes back to Castine. It was here in 1780, and it brought Lafayette to the States with the promise of the French king to help the revolutionary cause. The king from France promised ships, troops, clothing, money, and it helped our cause to find independence. They helped in the birth of this nation. And this ship has been rebuilt, the Hermione. It has been rebuilt in Rochefort in France, and it will sail to America again next year and will visit the important towns like Yorktown, where that ship in 1780 was decisive in the battle for independence. It will go to Philadelphia, New York, Annapolis, and other big towns, but it will come to Castine on the 14 juillet, le jour de la Bastille.
Great. Well, Elise, what we will do is try to find some information and put that on our Main Calling Facebook page. Thank you so much for calling in with that information.
Can I mention
sure.
that my ancestor, Germain Doucette, was the commander of the fort at Castine for 10 years, Fort Pantagua. So it's a very small world.
Going to Islesboro, and Mike, go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi, my name is Mike Boucher. I grew up in Van Buren and maintain a house there now. And believe that it's probably one of the most wonderful places on earth, the St. John River Valley. And, you know, when you drive into town and you stop anywhere, the conversations are in French. And even though I today don't recognize everybody there, when I speak French with them, there's an acceptance that... it's pretty indescribable. It's a total acceptance of, you know, you belong here, you're part here. When I grew up in Van Buren, went to the Van Buren school, I remember writing day after day on the chalkboard, I will not speak French in school, I will not speak French in school, and so on, because I always did. It's the language I knew. And remember feeling very... put out by that. You know, the teachers didn't understand English at the time, and they thought that you were talking about them. But it's a wonderful place. It's a wonderful people, and the people there are unlike anywhere else in the world. They're hardworking. It's a hard place to make a living. It's a hard place to survive. And the people that are there really, truly deserve to be a part of one of the finest cultures left on earth.
C'est bien dit, très bien dit. Merci beaucoup.
Mike, thank you for calling in. Is he right? Is Van Buren the best place in Maine?
One of them. Because there are 15 towns in the valley, you know.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mike. And going to Jay in North Yarmouth. Hi, Jay.
Hi. Just a quick comment that in my experience, children learn multiple languages easily. And there is, I would like to say that we should resist when we hear people, uninformed people, saying, English only, please. You know, I mean, in terms of our culture, I can understand a specific function somewhere, you know, but there is a crowd that believes that English should consume the world and your little language needs to go away. And I really, that makes me passionately upset. That's all.
Welcome to the club.
Thanks, Jay. Going to Rob in Windham. Hi, Rob. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hey there, everyone. This is great. As someone of Franco-American descent, and we also have a family reunion, although smaller group this weekend, which is kind of cool. I was curious about kind of piggybacking on what the last caller said, that Lewiston, a very traditional French-Canadian community, is now has another ethnic group or other ethnic groups that are also struggling with both assimilation and holding on to and preserving their own culture. And I'm just curious how the panel feels about, you know, helping them. Do they identify with their struggle as they come here, you know, and try to both hold on to their culture and language as well as become part of the larger community in Maine?
Are there lessons for the Somali, Sudanese communities in Maine?
Lessons or ways for us to reach out to them.
And maybe lessons for us.
Yes, exactly.
Actually, that's a wonderful suggestion. We don't have to necessarily be there. We could Skype if it's a matter of preservation. It's a matter of acculturation. Well, that's another thing. Geography and the context in which you live are very important elements that you have to take into account. Yeah. Don wants to.
My cousin is a retired teacher from not Auburn but Aubin, and she said that she taught a lot of Somali students. She said that the Somalis reminded them her very much of her parents when they first moved from here to Lewiston, and that they cared for their kids. She said they're the ones who come to the PTA meetings. They're the ones who make sure their kids do their homework. They really want their children to succeed. And she's very proud that she was teaching them these same values that her parents had taught her, you know.
Having a lot of relatives in Lewiston, you're absolutely right about that. I went to a conference at Bates College a few years ago, and the Somalian parents were having the same issue with their teenagers. They wanted to lose the veil. And one child admitted to her parents, "What's a fork? How do you say that?" So they're realizing that this has been done before. And I've been to Lewiston a lot. I have a lot of relatives there. And when you see the downtown filling up with these beautiful shops, I think Lewiston is doing it well right now.
Rob, thanks for calling in. We just have a couple minutes left. I want to ask you, Liz, is everybody who is Franco in Maine Acadian, or is this are Acadians a subset? Define this.
Oh, a subset. Oh.
In 2 minutes, Liz.
Oh, you have less than 2 minutes, Liz.
That's an interesting, you bring up an interesting point, semantics. In the St. John Valley, we rarely call ourselves Francos. We do not. And even when you speak to the youth, they will say, "I'm French." And we are descendants of French Canadians, whether it's from Quebec or Acadie.
France.
We are all, our ancestors were from France, and then history changed. Those who went to Quebec knew a different history from those who went to Acadie. And then those who came to the St. John Valley knew a very different history than the French Canadians who immigrated to the mill towns. And that's why I say that our cultures or our histories merge at the, in the 20th century with the advent of the KKK and the campaign of hate against the Francos and the French language. But there is, at the base, there is, although there might be blood ties, there are differences in the history, whether your ancestors came from Quebec or whether they came from Acadie. And having said that, I guess the word Franco-American, because it is recognized now by the Library of Congress, is kind of a word that we can all use to include all those of French heritage.
Lise, I have to make you stop. But the bottom line is that everyone is welcome at the Congress going
Absolutely.
On right
11
now.
11 days, 11 days.
Thank you all That's so all much. Lise Pelletier, Director of the Acadian Archives at the University of Maine, Fort Kent. Judy Parody, a former state legislator. George Dumont, President of the Congress, and Don Levesque, Vice President of the 2014 Acadian Congress. John Keimel ran the board today. Our intern, Charlotte Ruddy, answered your calls. We had additional help from the MPBN web team. We also want to extend a special thank you to Maurice Sear and the engineers at the CBC for their help with this program. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, join host Keith Shortall for a conversation about eating healthy and not breaking the bank doing so. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.